We are recording on the lands of the Wurundjeri Woi-wurrung people and we acknowledge them as traditional owners. We'd also like to pay our respects to their elders, past, present and emerging. Always was, always will be Aboriginal land.
Midnight to midnight. Welcome. Screening. Welcome to midnight screening. Welcome to screening. Welcome to midnight screening. I am screaming. I am screaming. I'm screaming.
Welcome to Midnight Screening, where we let you stay up past your bedtime with the movies that you probably shouldn't be watching, you naughty thing. I'm Noah.
Tut. I'm Eliza.
Eliza Anthony. How are we doing?
Hello. Great.
Welcome back, team. Here we are. Pearl's here as well.
Licking her ass.
Hey, someone's got to do it.
What if when Pearl licks her ass, a little saliva gets into the computer and it sends an email to the knife on top of your head and it says, release the knife, and the knife kills you.
Drops into your head.
Imagine if there was a film full of things like that.
It is true that the franchise we're talking about today, it has to arrive in the future a bit more. We need some tech-based kills.
God.
I'm ready. We need social media to kill us. Just
we already have unfriended.
We're all stuck in a Rube Goldberg machine. It's called Facebook.
Oh my God.
And you're just losing your brain every second you look at it.
But in unfriended, like most of the deaths were not really like actually caused by the technology.
Well,
right? Like
it
was just the thing that linked them all together.
That's why we love unfriended dark web. Did you see that one?
Maybe that is the one I saw.
The first one is like it's a spooky internet ghost.
It's a ghoul.
And the second one is like
it's an evil cult of trolls.
It's like trolls.
Like they get a guy, they SWAT a guy's house.
They get
where
a guy
they play
swatted.
Gunshot sounds so he dies by the cops.
It's actually amazing.
Down.
They like get cops to go to a guy's house and then they play gunshot sounds and
I
then
thought
the cops
that,
shoot him.
No, I don't think I have. I saw a movie that I thought was like this at your house, but I don't remember what it was called.
Maybe it was Host.
I think we showed Dark Web.
Yeah, we did.
Maybe it was Dark Web.
Yeah, but we also showed Host. Again, who knows what of many selections we pulled from our
Doesn't
great
get
library.
Hit by a truck like right at the end?
Yeah, that's the one. You got it.
That's the one,
yeah,
buddy.
Nice. Okay, great.
Yeah, that's it. It's a good one. Hey, not buddy, good friend. Buddy was too condescending for what you are, Anthony. I'm glad that you're here. Today we are doing another of a format that we don't do too much. We spoke about this last time. You know, it's only... I think I respect that it takes a very special film like a Minecraft movie or Sinners or something.
to bring us into the light for Now Screaming.
For Now Screaming, where we talk about the current films out that are worth talking about. And before we get into the one that we're talking about today, I thought that on Now Screaming, we haven't really talked about the things that we're excited to scream for that are coming up. Anticipated things. And I honestly just thought... For a horror podcast, we're always talking about like a thing we've just seen.
Yeah, we're always just shitting on stuff and we're not being like, this new thing could be good.
Could be good. There's a few things that, you know, I'm excited for. I am honestly like a bit thrilled and mildly, what's the good version of envious where like I feel very motivated by Together, by Bring Her Back. But the film I have to talk about that like I felt like a little kid looking up the Force Awakens trailer on YouTube or
some shit
when you're in like year nine, when that fucking trailer for Weapons came out.
You were mad.
I watched it when it came out. I watched it the next day when I got up to go to work. When I pulled into work in the car park, I watched it. I watched it on my lunch break and I watched it when I got back in the car at the end of lunch.
The next is that Craig movie.
It's, what's it? Zach Kreger's next film, the director of Barbarian, the like sleeper hit of last year.
I think a couple years ago. I feel like it's 2022.
Wow.
Yeah.
Time is passing.
Time fly.
A film, like a film who like when I heard its plot, I was like, oh, that sounds so good. And then you watch the trailer and you're like, I just think it is the exact pocket of ideas.
It's about evil little kids.
It's about evil kids
running rampant.
It has an analog horror element of essentially the again, this is why it's so great to have Anthony in the room always, because you're like an audience proxy. I sometimes get to deliver a thing at you.
Absolutely.
And see what, like, whether the this idea. Group. Yeah, you're like a focus group, whether this idea does hold up. The plot of the film is that in a town at like 2 something a.m., all of the kids in this one classroom walk out of the house, like run out of the house.
I have seen the trailer
in the early morning.
Are you rocked by it?
It looks spooky as hell.
Yeah.
It looks so scary. Yeah. And like just the idea of, apparently it's very, I was thinking on the drive home that he says Magnolia inspired.
Hell yeah.
Which I thought meant like,
because Magnolia has the storyline about the little boy.
Yeah. Like I thought by Magnolia inspired, it meant like lots of little vignettes of different characters. Like supposedly a section of the film follows the teacher of the classroom where all the kids went missing
and
from.
And then it might be like a parent. And
then it's a parent. Then it's a sheriff. Then it's the kids. But also like I recently rewatched Magnolia and I was like, oh yeah, it's all about how much we disrespect children and we don't. You know, we, like every adult is just a child that's been traumatized by the world and then grown up.
I just hope
like,
they have a big sing-along in this movie or the little kids sing a song. Yeah.
What would
like,
they sing?
We don't need no education.
We're the kids in America.
Yeah. Oh my God, that would rule. I have a quibble, okay?
Quibble.
I'm really excited for the movie. I think it'll be good. There's this whole, you know, whole industry gossip about a massive bidding war
apparently
for the movie and Jordan Peele was so pissed that they didn't win this auction or whatever that he fired his management. So like if he thinks it's real good, it's probably going to be good. I hope it is. But like I have to say, I think the plot or like the mystery of like suddenly everyone went missing and they never came back or whatever, I feel like that is becoming a little stale. I don't know.
What else is
I love in? The Leftovers. I've heard of like 5 different books that have this plot. And in particular, last month, a book came out that was like, all the little boys in town went missing. So it's like, I think it's just, I feel like there's been enough of them that also don't have an answer where it's like, where'd they go? The thing is, you're never going to know.
It's big
and it's
threat.
Like death itself. It just comes and it has leaves no answers.
The ambiguous thing would be a threat. Mm. It's true. But I think I just had the thing of like,
it looks scary.
Exactly what, like I loved Barbarian, but I sort of thought that structurally it implied more surprises than it actually had.
It's quite straightforward. When you watch it a second time,
you're like, it's one fun twist.
Yeah.
And a great character introduction.
And there's some really cool filmmaking in it as well. Mm. Like it's not a pointless rewatch, but you are like, it relied a lot on novelty.
Yeah. Mm. I just think, and again, I guess what I mean is it's been a long time since I've been excited for something where like I am transplanting my hopes for what I think it could be.
Say it now. What do you reckon?
It's that, okay, this is such a weird thing I made up in my mind about Barbarian before seeing it that I'm now doing to this movie. But like it felt like Barbarian, if you're going to be a filmmaker who deals in like, my film is very much made for audiences to sort of that like early Shyamalan thing where it's like, okay, if you're going to twist audiences in a way that feels earned but is about getting an audience reaction, when the rug gets pulled out from under me, it really should feel exciting and like I'm on new ground. And I thought that the back end of Barbarian was going to be like, there's another dungeon and it's like, really high tech or something. Sort of like the end of Martyrs, you know what I mean? Where it's like there's actually, first there's like a dungeon and then beneath that it's actually like some organization or secret society or some shit. I don't know. But just the idea in that trailer for Weapons where I was like, oh, there's like multiple different versions of creepy lore happening here, and hearing that it's a film that sort of maybe it's going to take place in like 6 chapters or something like that, where like each is with a different character, that I hope it's a film that actually has multiple ideas that themselves would be enough for one movie, but then just it keeps changing what kind of movie it is.
Okay.
And when you hear people talk about the script,
it's a little poo-poo platter. It's a little cheese plate of scary movies.
I want a
ideas.
Deli board, and I just want different versions of the film I want. And you know, I like a film about creepy kids and how we hate kids. And there's a shot in that trailer where the camera is low and it's outside of school and it's panning across the front lawn and a like wave of children bursts through a glass window and sprints. And I was like,
they're like Naruto running, like their arms are like out. I also wonder, I'm really curious about it. I'm really excited for it. And I'm curious about the title, what weapons is going to mean. Because Barbarian also had a mysterious title that was sort of a bit up to interpretation.
I think it's like the kids are being weaponized in some way.
Yeah. I guess it being about a class going missing, it makes you kind of think of a school shooting or something.
Mm.
So I wonder if there's going to be some allegory with that in there.
Mm.
I don't know.
I'm excited for Julia Gardner to finally, I'm like, that's
Garner.
Someone, Julia Garner.
I once did a FaceApp thing, which celebrity are you? And it told me that I was her.
You have a bit of her
I don't
in there.
Think I do at all, but.
I guess you're just blonde at the moment. Do you have a pointy face? You have a bit of a
pointy
face.
No, I don't. I have a very square jaw, I think.
Yeah, it's true. She's someone that I've been waiting for them to give her a film where she gets to land, you know, and this seems like it will be it.
Sick.
And I will stop talking about this film. I'm going to stop. I just do think it should be said that also whenever we're, or at least for myself, I should speak for myself, whenever I'm excited by a film, it's usually because it has a bunch of ideas that I feel like I'm interested in putting in my work. And you're like, that thing we talk about a lot on the show of that there are ideas floating around in the air.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are on the same wavelength and it's like, who's going to get it? You know what I mean? Like, just stories
like
about...
Like you're saying, there's a lot of stuff about nuclear war movies coming out.
There are.
Which is weird.
James Cameron's coming up. Denis Villeneuve's is coming up. And yeah, I just think like this idea of films, not found footage, but like using security cameras or using early internet. This film has, again, everything with this film along the way, I was like, I'm sort of furious at it because it's so good. Like it has the sick 90s style in-universe website.
Awesome.
Literally the weekend that we were finalizing our website, midnightscreeningproductions.com. You should go check it out. Just that thing where I'm like, oh my God, this is so, it's just so on the pulse to me.
God.
And I'm really excited.
He jacked my swag.
I know.
Zach, no.
He jacked my swag. No. Doing great.
Jacked my swag.
I'm happy for you to jack my swag all day long. All day long. Zach, I'm very excited for your film.
Zach,
weapons.
Craig, I'm more like Jack Swagger.
Do you need time?
Let's talk about Final Destination.
I am going to pick up my glass of wine and give it a little swirl.
Wait, I'll do it too.
And we'll give it a little chink. L'chaim. That was the sound of old friends reminiscing about the finer things in life.
This, you know what? This wine would age bloody well, like a good franchise should. Six films in and it still tastes juicy and ripe and like, I don't know wine that much. Like wine.
We're almost out of wine things.
Yeah.
Eliza, this
this is so good.
More to us that we are talking today about the only new release that matters, Final Destination Bloodlines.
Yeah.
Since we started Midnight Screening, we've talked about when our Final Destination tribute was going to be.
Yeah.
This is the first of, I guess, two parts. This is a now screaming, but essentially today we are talking about the new installment in the franchise, Final Destination Bloodlines. And next week we will be talking about the first five films and just giving, I feel like if I was to be a scholar of anything.
If you went on like hard quiz, you could do Final Destination as your topic.
It's true. I probably would go on hard quiz with Final Destination. Yeah. Eliza, can you tell everyone our history with these films?
Oh, I think this is, you know, there would be individual scary movies that appealed to us as kids, but this was the first horror franchise that we fell in love with communally as a family. And
just
I don't think we watched them in order, which is strange.
No, we didn't. It's the first time I connect horror to the like the mechanics of a nerd brain, which I always had, you know, being a kid, like obsessed with like, you know,
where kids are, how kids are about dinosaurs or something.
Yeah. Like hyperfixating on the details of a superhero or, a, you know, whatever it is. Like I had James Bond and then I feel like I
Thunderbirds
had
Thunderbirds as well was before that.
And literally like, I think after James Bond, it was fucking Final Destination.
And once you're there, that's like a gateway into just horror.
All of it.
Yeah. Yeah,
which is really what happened.
Like seeing so much positive press around this movie, seeing it in cinemas, which was so magical. I've been thinking about another franchise, which is like sort of a funny flip of it. I feel like it's maybe like, I don't know, maybe every franchise is sort of a genre unto itself. But I feel like the Final Destination movies and the Saw movies are sort of almost their own genre because every movie like pretty much does the same thing. This one, like it didn't bill itself as being like, it's a completely different experience or like, we were sort of worried that Bloodlines, was it going to try and be like a legacy sequel, like your Halloweens and whatever.
So glad you brought it up.
And like, it was just more of the same and I was fucking thrilled. And I feel the same about Saw where I'm like, don't be more serious. Don't do an elevated Saw movie. Don't like I have crazy ideas of like, it would be so cool if they did a Saw movie set here or there. And it's like, no, I just want them to do exactly what they've been doing again and again every year.
It's one of the only spaces where I'm so excited to see a filmmaker exist within the box and change just enough that it's exciting, but not enough that they think there's a problem with the box. Like I love the box.
You love that box.
It's so comforting to me. No exaggeration whatsoever. I've cooked dinner to three of these films. Like I just think it's the definition of like comforting horror.
Oh, do we need to say what them. The... like overarching premises of the whole franchise?
Yeah, for sure. Should we get into it? Is there anything else we need to preface with our Final Destination Bloodlines thoughts? I think next week we'll talk a bit more about our, you have to tune in next week for our
that's true.
Origin story with Final Destination. Because I remember the exact trip when we started watching those films.
Yeah.
So you're going to hear about that next week. Nice. But let's talk about Bloodlines. Final Destination Bloodlines is the sixth installment in the Final Destination franchise. Again, as Liz said, I'm sure you have some vague idea of what the story of these films is, but essentially in the Final Destination world, if you cheat death, death is pissed and it's going to get back at you. So these films revolve around a group of people where due to our lead character having a premonition
of some horrific disaster that's going to wipe out a bunch of people.
They because they see this disaster ahead of time, they save a bunch of lives. But then because Death had a plan, Death doesn't like being cheated. He's going to clean up the score and pick these people off one by one in elaborate Rube Goldberg style
deaths that
deaths.
Are like insane, unlucky coincidences.
Absolutely.
I think it would be
one in a trillion coincidences that happen one after another.
I think it would be so great if Death at Karaoke did Before He Cheats by Carrie Underwood. It's like, I drove my key into the- and it's talking about like, okay, I set up a big fan above the head. Blah, blah. Yeah, anyway.
Let's stop. If you need to, we could ask AI
Death,
for it.
Yeah, she will.
That's good. No, actually, I'm getting it now. It took me a while, but I know what you mean.
Maybe next time he'll think before he cheats. You know?
That's great.
As it kills somebody.
That's really good.
That's my anime music video remix.
I've been looking for an excuse for us to sing on the podcast again.
Oh, no.
So, unfortunately, I'm going to ask that we come back to that. Not gonna. I don't want you to improv it. I want us to come up with a Weird Al style
All right.
parody. You have to do work now.
Okay, anyway, I'll do it.
You
plan on that.
I know you will.
I've come around pretty quickly.
You're not making ice hotels anymore, so we can talk about that another day.
For another time.
Eliza got really obsessed with making ice hotels for a bit. Anyway, don't worry about it. With not making
designing
them.
Designing ice hotels.
Sketching them and then not doing
anyway,
them.
Anyway,
she did it every night. I've never seen her work so hard on anything ever. Finally, Social Bloodlines number 6. We've been very excited for this one. It's been, again, it's a franchise that every time they have a new film, it's implied that it's some big fucking surprise that it does really well at the box office. So with the fourth and worst entry, we'll talk about that next week. It was called as every... Yeah, exactly. As every great horror franchise has, one of the films has a title.
The final chapter. And the next one is like The Awakening.
A New Beginning or some shit. The fourth one was called The Final Destination and it was a huge hit. Final Destination 5 did pretty well as well.
And then what the fuck? We waited for like a decade and a bit for the next one.
Ages and ages and ages.
Why?
And we had heard a few different versions of what this film could be and... A lot of them were really exciting. Like due to the success of Game of Thrones, there was rumors that the next installment was going to be set in the Dark Ages.
Mm.
Again, it's a franchise that I think really suits doing the like Predator-esque thing of like putting it in different contexts.
Yeah, it's death. That bitch is everywhere.
Exactly. It's a. There was rumors that the next film was going to be set around like emergency responders, like firefighters and
is that insensitive?
Yeah, truly. Just what, picking them off?
Yeah, I guess just especially after like COVID where it's like, God bless our essential workers. And then it's a movie where it's like nurses getting their heads sliced off. And
your
shit.
Hubris for surrendering your life to help people.
We're not clapping outside for you no more.
So I don't know about you, but when I heard about Final Destination Bloodlines, even just the title, I was like, not a legacy sequel. No.
And you didn't like the trailer.
I didn't like
you
the trailer.
It looked like shit.
I didn't like the trailer. And I think
now
this,
you're eating crow.
I'm eating crow. Again, hard franchise to rank because they're all so great. It's
and they're all very similar.
On like, a different day, depending on the day, this could be my favorite.
I think this is the best one.
It's probably like... on the paper, the best one, right?
But it's also, I was about to say, oh, it's the most surprising. And it's like, yeah, I've seen the others like a million times. I've seen this once. Yeah. And we saw it in the cinemas.
Yeah.
We saw it in a cinema like the weekend before it came out somehow. Mm. And we were like, the vibe in the cinema was strange. We were the only ones like hooting and hollering. We were laughing out loud.
I'm getting overwhelmed by the amount of things we're allowed to talk about this franchise.
Yeah,
wow. Because I have endless stories. I remember with Final Destination 5, the night before, it was like the weekend, we had school that week, and the night before, we were literally, like, generally we're pretty well-behaved kids, and I think we respect our parents. We were throwing hissy fits. We were like, we don't fucking care that we have to go have, like, family dinner at grandma's at lunch.
Aww.
You are going to, like, we have got to fucking see Final Destination 5 tomorrow morning. So, like, who sees a horror film at like 10 a.m.?
Did we see it in cinemas?
You, me and Dad went to go see Final Destination 5 at like 10 a.m. at Hoyt's Chadston.
Oh, 100%. I thought this was the first one I've seen in cinemas. I don't remember that. That's so crazy.
Oh, maybe you don't remember.
I don't remember that.
And it was like an empty cinema.
Wow.
Because most of the Letterboxd reviews for this movie are like, whoa, it's so weird to see one of these in a cinema.
Yeah.
Because they're such sleepover favorites. But I'm like, speak for yourself. I was there.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Wasn't it?
You definitely were. You had to have been.
I saw Paranormal Activity at like 11 a.m. at Bondi Junction.
So wild.
Were there other people in the cinema?
Yes.
Was it less scary?
I went with people.
It's
yeah.
weird to come out and it's like lunchtime.
Yeah.
It's very weird. Yeah.
Because this movie would be great.
My tiny mind had been blown by probably at that point the only horror film I'd ever seen.
Oh, me too, though. It's so good. Like these films, you leave them and you like, I was in the car driving home and I was doing a numerical list of the deaths in my brain. Like I was just going like trying
drive
to remember
a little
them
bit slower. Don't go through the like, you know, yellow light. I was a little bit more cautious.
So good. Yeah. So with this film specifically, I guess, just back to the thing of I was worried it was going to be a legacy sequel. This style of thing in all IP filmmaking, but like it's been happening a lot in horror as well, where you make a film that is ostensibly pretty respectful. It's made with a lot of care, but it's mostly just exists in reference to things that you love. I thought,
and it's often about like, remember the fun things in those movies? Now they're really sad.
Yeah.
Remember this character that you remember? She's like an alcoholic now.
Adding depth to things. Yeah, and adding like depth to things that were just like very like, you know, at the time, inconsequential details. Yeah. And I thought that Bloodlines was going to mean the characters are all descendants of people that died in the previous films or something.
Yeah, so there'd be a lot of flashback in and explaining. Mm.
But one of the rare things about this franchise against literally every other piece of IP is there is no connective tissue. There's no killer. That's, like, the killer is death. The most you ever see of quote-unquote death is spooky wind.
Yeah.
And some, like, water that has a mind of its own in the very first movie. Death,
and then they were like, nah, forget it. We don't want
to
do
that. Even that's too literal to see water like move out and then retract like by itself. Like there's no continuing final girl.
The only continuing character is the, well, I mean, Ali Larter is in the first two, but is the late great Tony Todd. And he is like, he's has a great presence in these movies. You're always excited to see him, but like he's really just there as like a angel or a chorus or something that shows up and is like, you're all gonna die. And then everyone dies and then the next movie starts and it's meeting an entirely new group of dumb teens who are all gonna die.
Ultimate harbinger of doom. Mm. And he just has nothing to say but like, you're fucked.
Yeah.
Other than occasionally when he has advice that he gives and then immediately it doesn't work as well.
Yeah.
But that's a good place to start. Let's chat briefly about Tony Todd in this, because this is the final on-screen performance of Tony Todd, the iconic like actor who played Candyman. He's in all of these films. And it's really a moment that has the weight of like...
It's the most legacy sequel-y kind of thing.
And feels like earned though in a way where you're like, this feels like even just on the baseline of like a crew making a film, respecting a person where you're like, it seems like everyone making this knew this was probably going to be his last.
Yeah.
He's not obviously.
Visibly very gaunt and it's a lot of chair acting where he's just sitting and talking. And you're like, good, stay seated. Like,
the character's talking about death always, but he's like really talking about death.
Yeah.
And his last lines in this movie, his last monologue, is entirely improvised. They told him.
Was it improv? I know he came up with it, but I don't know if, like, did he write? I mean, it's maybe not a huge difference, but I assume, like,
not
he
the
scripted
whole thing,
it.
But the last, like, lines for, pardon me, before he walks off. I'm choking up, guys. improvised. And aww. I just think it's really interesting that we've found a way for something that. In some of the films, the Tony Todd moments, you're waiting for him to be given a little bit more to do and he's just doing the same thing that he did in the last one. But I feel like it's interesting in this that like what is usually just like vaguely like waxen poetic about death speeches actually is given the weight of someone being like, let me think about this for a minute. You know what I mean? It kind of hits.
I did read that a producer was saying he sort of wrote it and wanted it to be like, you know, he doesn't make eye contact with the camera, but like, piercing beyond the fourth wall to talk to his fans and be like, I'm not scared to die, which is so wild to fold into this movie about that's trying to terrify you with horrific deaths.
Totally.
And he says like, you know, that you can't cheat death. The only thing you can do is like accept that you're going to die and live anywhere and live life to the fullest, which is like a very sentimental, cutesy message. But it's like you cannot divorce it from the fact that he was actively dying while he said it and wrote it. Like, I wouldn't say I like choked up watching it or anything, but
neither. I just think it's interesting that they let it mean something instead of like rush through it. When the other films, I'm like,
yeah,
for this being the only marker you have of consistency, you don't let it mean anything more than just Tony Todd is here.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think this movie makes a very mature choice, and I'm interested to know whether you agree that like, the only quote-unquote legacy idea it plays into is that Final Destination has done the rare thing that very few horror things, the only thing I can think of kind of in the last like 10, 20 years that has done it is Get Out, which is like a film where some of its images or iconography like become a part of all of our day-to-day lives. You know, the sunken place in Get Out and all those things. Mm. We all talk about the Final Destination, the log truck from Final Destination 2. Yeah. The idea of like being on the freeway and thinking about that happening to you. Or like looking at something in your life and being like, oh, Final Destination.
I better move that cup away from that electrical socket.
Yeah, like that Final Destination is just the star of this franchise is the mental image.
It's just anxiety.
Of anxiety.
It's just OCD.
There's a lot of Final Destination 2 love in some of the images of this, including its ending, which we'll get to.
I think they
do. Do you like the legacy elements of this film in that there aren't any?
Yes, yeah. I mean, the log truck is definitely highlighted. It feels like they got like a fan response, or actually I would say like a normie response of people who kind of only vaguely know the movies. They're like, oh my God, the log truck. Mm. And it's like the log truck is basically like a character in its own right at this point. It gets a good amount of screen time.
Yeah.
In Bloodlines.
Okay, I have a list of things relating to each of these films. This is a template I was thinking we can try out next week. Oh, you're going to employ it
next week. Okay.
Okay, what do you think? Because again, if we're talking about a structure that we love, mm-hmm. let's do a dissection?
Yeah, is sure.
That the word? We're going to dissect the opening event.
Yes.
The opening trauma. Eliza, what is the opening trauma event of Final Destination Bloodlines?
So for Bloodlines, it is a period setting, which incredible, I love.
Incredible, amazing, so clever.
In the like maybe early 60s or late 50s, there is like a Space Needle kind of thing where it's one of those restaurants that's up on like a big, I don't know, spike. And because of an unlucky penny, which I love her. Wow, what an idea, what a concept.
The flip of a coin.
And, you know, the usual sort of like,
mounting
little series of mistakes. The glass cracks, the tower starts to tip over, everyone's dying, people are getting piano slammed onto them. And so it's not for the first time adding height into the opening disaster.
It's actually a good point that there aren't many like height sort of vertigo-y ones in the franchise.
There's the bridge, there's I guess in a plane.
The bridge isn't really height though.
Yeah, people have fallen off. That's bad. You die from that.
No, but I mean, they're not like hanging from things and like scared of falling down.
Aren't they? He's like, you gotta scoot across that pole or something.
But there are characters that literally like fall in the water and like
live?
Breathe. Well, then cars fall on them. But like, it's not like this where it's like the idea is you're like, it's like when you go to.
Yeah, it's about the height and the vertigo.
You're on like,
she's already scared of heights getting up there even before anything bad has happened.
Yeah, totally.
I thought the opening disaster was fantastic.
Is it the best?
I think so. Little fucking child getting splattered by a piano. Oh my God. We screamed. And also for like not even kills, but just awful gruesome bits that you feel so much because of the sound design, like someone breaking their ankle before they die or the main character, she's just been proposed to by her sweet, caring partner. And he's given her a wedding ring that's a little bit too tight for her ring finger.
Oh my God.
And at the end of the horrible opening sequence, the ring, she's dangling off the side of the tower by her ring, is being pinned between two nails and the ring degloves off her finger and you just see the little hollow skin bag stuck there as she like plummets to her death.
And the image of her, so like the convention thing of like as they die, the camera goes into their eyeball and then they come out of the vision is like, it's like the cutscenes in those new Tomb Raider video games where you just watch her get like so violently spiked by something. Like it's like the spike goes into her head as she comes towards the camera and it creates the feeling I have when a shark swims towards the screen. It's so scary. Because it will like sometimes do jump cuts to it. And I'm like, no, I can't
another,
do it.
Like we love a opening sequence where it's like, I don't know if they do this that much either. It's like the turning point from everyone having a terrific time to chaos hitting or whatever. It hits when, because it's the 60s, everybody is singing, shout, throw my hands up and shout. And like you know, the song gets like softer and then louder, and you know that when they get louder, they're going to break the floor and everyone's going to die. So it's like music tension. It's awesome.
Oh, it's so clever. I think, like, thinking about it now, I guess a lot of them do it well. I don't think any of the opening sequences in this franchise
are a
complete flop, but something that I think 5 and 6 do that I love is use the opening event to have lots of little deaths inside it that are completely different.
Mm.
Like, yeah, again, we'll talk about them next week, but like with, I'm thinking about like in 5 with the bridge collapse, that like there's the guy who gets boiled by
hot tar stuff.
And there's like the giant like wire things like snapping, holding up the bridge, snapping and whipping
people.
I mean,
people. In this like, one you had a guy getting halved by an elevator falling and stuff.
Yeah, there's just so much variety to the different way. And it does a lot of those sort of kills, this movie, where like it's a face or a body getting pulled cleanly in 2 different directions. There's such a good kill.
And it really holds on them.
It's gross. Like just fully bodies turning into sacks of meat. We sound like serial killers in this episode more than usual.
I have to, maybe I'm, okay. Go by your rubric. I don't want to jump ahead.
Yeah, we'll get there. We really will.
Wait, are we giving a number rating?
Yeah. What do we need? Is it skulls or is it, what is it? Is it, what's a death thing? What are all the death things? Logs. Logs. Out of five logs.
5 out of 5 logs.
It's 5 out of 5 logs for me too. I think there's so much variety to it. As you said, it immediately establishes that these directors, Zach Lipovsky and Adam Stein, are very good at the franchise thing of like, we are going to give you multiple set pieces of just ratcheting tension, introducing different fucking things that could go wrong. And
there's
slowly
always red herrings
paying off each one.
It's like a magic trick, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I would give it 5 out of 5 as well.
Hell,
I think
that's
possibly the best.
What is your next?
Next is one that we're going to go on a real roller coaster with in this franchise and maybe never give a full 5, which is The Final Girl.
Yeah.
I want to talk about the lead, not the thing we usually talk about.
I can think of
one
4 or 5 star Final Girl, but we'll meet her next week.
Oh, that is so interesting to me.
Yeah.
Really? I don't think there's a 5 in there for me.
You care about acting and stuff though. I'm just like, I liked him.
No. You're so right. Yeah. You're so right. I actually really apologize. You're right. I thought this was better than we did. Yeah.
In Final
Exactly.
Station.
And all the boys that are leads in this are such final girls. They're all
sweeties.
Yeah. I thought the lead in this was quite good.
You were quite impressed by the acting. You
I thought the performances were
good. Partway through were like, wow, well, these kids are really good actors.
And the scene work was pretty good, yeah. So Caitlin Santa Juana played the granddaughter of the woman who had the premonition
D-gloved
at the start.
Finger spike proposed
so
head spike.
The way that this film, like the big, bold, new, it's the most a film has come in with an idea that, again, changes, quote unquote. It's still the franchise didn't like know.
Yeah, but it's like enough of a change.
Yeah, the idea is that in the 60s, this lady saved literally so many people's lives, like hundreds of people's lives, that death has been coming, like that's so many strands of life that it's taken death years and years and years to pick
get around
off
to everybody.
Each person and all of the children they had and all of the children whose children, like, there's so many family trees that death is just wiping out that this lead final girl is like death has finally made its way down the list to her grandmother.
Because she's the last one that died in the vision.
Because she's the last one who died in the vision. And I thought that she did a really good job. And I feel like now would be a good time to talk about the fact that this is the most that like the character work of the franchise works, other than maybe I would say the first one, just off the basis that you don't know that it's hopeless yet in the first one.
Yeah, I agree. I think, I mean, Bloodlines, and then it's all about death is coming for their family. I feel like the movie did a good job wringing family drama out of that premise and the idea that like everyone's estranged from the grandma her two kids are estranged from each other. Mm. There's like divorce, there's infidelity. There's like in the families, there's like the golden boy and the like shitty tattoo boy or whatever. It's a little bit Succession, I guess.
Yeah.
And it was like much more fertile ground than the other movies, which tend to be more like sexy college students. And there's a bitch, there's a bimbo, there's like a perv guy, there's a funny guy.
Mm.
And it's like, okay, Scooby-Doo, like you're all going to die, whatever. Like there was a little bit more substance in this one, right?
And especially for a franchise that like, as we said, it really does have potential to be in so many places because it's not tied to a Laurie Strode or a Sidney Prescott, that like it is frustrating to just get a transplant of a new group of slasher teens as though this franchise is a traditional slasher. So yeah. I did appreciate that the dynamics here were totally different. Mm. Like even the characters that could have been more simple, I kind of really loved. Like there's one of the lead girl's cousins who's like such a little golden retriever boy. He's so sweet. He's essentially just the second he believes it, he's like, okay, yeah, okay, what do we have
to
do?
I don't want to die. But he's like a grown man. He looks like 30.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It's very Sean William Scott in the first movie, which we'll talk about next week.
Yeah.
Where I'm like, okay, I'll save my thoughts on that for next week.
Exactly.
He's a weird character in that.
It's exhausting, right? Oh my God. It's just too much goodness to talk about. But yeah, I thought that like all of the different characters and their dynamics are actually really interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting like in the admirable way where like they're serviceable enough that I was never annoyed when they were happening.
And also the movie is not above establishing these bonds and then after a really beautiful emotional beat, just like slicing one of the people that has given the monologue in half.
Yeah.
Like so mean-spiritedly. Like it doesn't completely stick its head up its own ass being like, this is the, you know, this, it's really about family.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't believe you.
It lets it be so much more mean-spirited, which again is the thing where you're like,
it's like
when
parents
death,
watching their kids die one by one. It's horrible.
I sort of do leave and think more about what it's saying about death than like a lot of horror films that take that a lot more seriously, where like we talk on this podcast every few weeks about the morality of horror. Am I cheering for the victim or are they, you know, like, do I want them to survive or do I want to see them die as violently as possible? Like, are we rooting for them or are we rooting for the killer? Like this franchise really allows you to be like, a second ago I cared for you and now that was like the meanest way of having them die.
And I laughed and cheered.
And it was so funny. Like it was great. It was so good.
Every single movie having a new cast of like generally relative unknowns does a lot of that heavy lifting.
Yeah.
Where you're like, chop them up. I don't know who that is.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh my God, that's really bad to say.
Let's talk about what we're all here to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, do you want to say your favorite death of the film? I feel like there's one that everyone will talk about as in the pantheon.
Is that the MRI machine
one? It's the MRI machine one, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Which
it's two kills in one.
Comes in two parts. It's a two-hander. It comes after, as you were just saying, you have like some scene work with two characters. It's like really fun and interesting. It's like they're talking about how they have to do the thing in Final Destination 2 where it's like for death
we can
to skip
kill
you
and then bring you back to life and then you will have died and it will skip you.
Exactly. So
and they look at a baby and are like, we could take the baby's life. Nah, we wouldn't do that. We're lovely.
And then he's like, oh, you have a peanut butter allergy, so
eat some nuts, you will die. The hospital will bring you back to life.
Because we're in a hospital, we'll be fine. And they go into the MRI machine room. By the way, another really mean joke, I should just say, that I really appreciated. It was so fucking mean. One of the characters, you think they're going to die in this elaborate way and then they don't.
Mm.
And it's revealed that the reason death is skipping them, because it's like, it should be me. I'm the oldest. I should be next. Is because his mom had an affair.
He's an affair baby. It's like, well, why did death put him through all that then?
Like he just actually almost died
death
the night
before.
Death
was like, oops, my bad. And then.
Yeah, he almost dies in the tattoo parlor, but. He does not. He's here. He's with his family, his cousin, his brother.
Well, they're different dads, but.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Oh, true. And this MRI machine fucking turns on and you're like, this is going to be amazing. And then it's a death that has like six different elements inside of it that are so fucking messed up. He essentially, because he's all like tatted up and pierced.
They've threatened us with seeing his nose piercing, his septum ring getting yanked out. That's bad enough. His earring, his ear hole ones get yanked out.
And then you see his
shirt. And then you see his nips like rise up and you're like, no, he has nipple piercings. And you're like, wow, that was funny and ribald or whatever. And then he has a dick piercing also and that gets ripped out the front of his jeans. Like, this is just like so evil and mean and funny.
It's so mean.
And then he gets fucking wham, like it, he gets dragged towards the MRI
machine.
There's
a wheelchair behind him.
Is snapping him over backwards, and as the other brother is like, yeah, mid dying from the peanuts he's ingested so they can do this whole scheme, he's like, I think not even realizing that his half brother has been slain by MRI machine, and it's strong enough to yank a coil out of a vending machine in the other room, and the coil whams through his head. And to get closer to the MRI machine, it is slowly like corkscrewing into his skull, like just driving him further and further into the machine.
As the other characters enter the room, the corkscrew thing in like the vending machine coil is like going into
it's
his
still
head.
It's still boring into him.
But the most, again, the thing with the MRI machine one that just elevated it endless, like it just kept on elevating it, was firstly, of course, when his body is thrust into the fucking MRI machine and the wheelchair hits it, he's getting inverted backwards into the hole. So like his body is already becoming a fucking acute angle. Is that what?
Acute is the little, right?
Yeah.
Less than 90 degrees.
Yeah. Or wouldn't it be 260 degrees?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's very obtuse.
It's very obtuse. It's all the other way around. You know what I mean? But also, he has a giant, I would say that is such a good idea. He has a giant tattoo of a skull on his chest. So there's this shot from inside the MRI machine.
Yeah, I forgot about
as
that.
As you see the wheelchair spokes and
working through his body,
pushing through his body, coming
and exploding
out of this
out of the
skull. And it is just
it's cooked
for people like us. It's what we were born here to witness.
In some cultures, it's considered entertaining. I think more than that, the one that like I found near traumatizing was the trash compactor death. Where like, yeah, we watch a lot of horror and gross stuff. And like the way it was filmed was just so awful to me.
And the setup was a unique thing the franchise hasn't done before. Can you talk a bit about the setup for it as well?
So it's as the main character is getting woke to death's design and is like, my grandma, old Mima, who survived the big needle thing at the start, she says that like you should be able to follow little clues. Death is like, it's trying to be cute and always like plays a song about death or something on the radio as you're walking by. Or it shows little ominous things. And if you're able to follow them, you could predict what death is about to do to you and avoid it.
Trust
and she's like,
science, yeah.
What if that fell on there and bounced into there and blah, blah, blah. And everyone's like, you're crazy. And then while she's saying this, whatever, in the background, it happens to her cousin who gets thrown into a, you know, garbage truck's compactor. And like from there, the death is quite straightforward. You know what you're about to see. And when you see the compactor close over her, like half of her head, like the way that the camera just held on it and I was like watching it unblinking. It's like, oh, this is like fucking me up a little bit. This is like really awful.
It is one of those ones that you're like, oh, I don't think my like monkey brain wants to see those things.
I meant to see that, yeah.
It's like the top half of her face stays where it is as the bottom half.
It's an uncanny effect.
Again, there's something in this one particularly that because it's doing...
It's like people glitching, like bones and muscle glitching.
That's a really good way of putting it.
Thank you.
Because it's also like because they're doing CGI, I'm like, if you're going to be, if we're out of nu metal horror vibe of the early 2000s, and we'll talk about the aesthetic and visuals a bit more later because it's the main thing I miss from 2 and 3. If we're doing CGI digital blood, do people's bodies stay in one place while the other part of the body grows into another one? And it does that a lot.
Yeah.
And that, as you said, that kill was one that you're like, whoa, my brain. I just thought that the setup to that joke was great. And it's not a thing they've done before where it's like the audience, you know, that thing where you say what the audience is thinking, but you also still are like, because she's pitching it to her cousin saying you're next, but we don't know yet that actually he's not next. Her other cousin is next. So like that's what how this joke happening in the background happens. But like it's really funny. Like I think it's really clever to see to be like, oh my God, it's actually that she's
I really liked
go.
It and I'm glad it didn't go too much further than that. When they started it, there's a whole – so in the trailer it showed – the like piercings cousin, it teased that he was going to get the classic Final Destination death of stepping backwards into the street while you're saying like, if you guys believe that, then you should all just go drop when they get smacked. And the trailer cut away then. But in the movie, he avoids the truck whammy into him. And that was a delight because you're like, oh, trailer, you got me, damn.
It reminds me of the joke that Scream 5 did that I like where like, the character keeps on opening doors in front of the camera and you keep and being like when he closes the door, there's going to be a killer there. And then he opens like 40 doors. Yeah. Like, it's good. It's fun. It's a good idea.
I was actually going to precisely say that I was worried that it was getting into Scream 4 territory where it was like...
Scream 5? Or Scream 4?
No, 4 even, where they're talking about how it's meta too much. Yeah. And it's just tiring to hear characters be like, well, what if we're in some kind of fucked up horror movie? And you're like, yeah.
It's happy to be a Final Destination movie.
Yeah, more. And it moves on from there. Just to,
it does.
Yeah.
I also want to talk about the death, the way death is talked about in this movie I love. Like I love that death is, you know, especially the grandma character, she'll literally be like, nice try, big guy. Like,
yeah, she's like, I see you, you fuck. Like, you know, and thwarts whatever death's doing.
And it's just like, it assumes that death is so much more, like the tone of the movie is just that little bit sillier enough that like it can do things like essentially the old grandma lady. So she goes to meet her old grandma who everyone in the family is like, do not meet her.
She ruined our lives. She was super overprotective because she thought death was out to get us.
She's crazy and paranoid and she lives in this weird complex.
She lives in the most ridiculous
house. We'll talk about the weird complex.
Whatever.
And a franchise fault that this movie definitely falls into. But they go to the weird complex where she is and I was just like, this is so lame. I love it. Where essentially the old grandma lady, she's told her granddaughter the theory and it's as it would, you know, be honest with yourself, it would scare you too. She's like, I'm leaving. You're scaring me.
I
don't
want to be like, yeah, I can't believe this.
And her hermit grandma who never leaves the house is like, she steps across the threshold and she literally says out loud, she's like, you need to see this. And she like essentially just like waits for death to kill her in front of her granddaughter's eyes.
It's quite beautiful. It's like a family blood sacrifice or whatever.
It is. She's like, you need to see this to believe. And she stands
what
there.
A G.
And the what
it's like
called?
A weather vane and like a fuel tank. I don't even really remember, but like her jaw gets slammed off of her face.
It goes right through her brain and the spike comes towards the camera like it's you know, a post-Avatar 3D film.
Magical.
That was a really good one. MRI machine, garbage truck.
Trash compactor, the lawnmower that was shown in the trailer.
That is a thing that Final Destination does sometimes that I respect but is hard where it so alludes to one kind of death that is a red herring. But unfortunately, the red herring is more entertaining than the one that we get.
The idea of trampoline death, you mean?
So it's both.
And someone drinking a shard of glass.
Yeah, there's a shard of glass that gets into
someone's cup of ice.
And it's this fun mechanic the franchise hasn't done before where you're like, whose cup is the shard of glass in?
Because we haven't figured out.
Because we don't know who's next. Mm. I thought that was really fresh and new. And they're jumping on a trampoline and there's like a really pointy
rake. There's like
rake
rakes and stuff under.
Anyway, he dies from getting a lawnmower to the face. And I just thought it was less entertaining
than
the other
ones. And
they
didn't show the face mowing very much.
Yeah.
But that's okay.
Yeah. Other than that.
Not that many kills maybe.
Do we talk about the third act?
I think.
Third act.
It'll come up a lot next week. These movies suffer from, once there are less characters, it's down to just the main characters that the movie has tried to make us care for. It's always like a much more emotionally fraught extended death kind of sequence where they're like desperate and they'll come up with some stupid fucking plan where they're like, if we do this, we last three or two or whatever, we'll survive. And the movie cannot kill them off in a fun, flippant way anymore. It has to be that they're drowning like the main character is in this one, or they're stuck in a burning thing or something. And then you kind of know that because you're only 80 minutes into the movie that they will not die, our main characters.
Yes. The films have a mechanic that the like cynicism and meanness of it inherently provides a problem because stories are built on
you have to care about what happens to
and
people.
Obstacle, and their situation is hopeless and the solution so constantly feels really like manufactured, particularly when there's six films and the solution is usually the same thing.
Yeah.
I thought this one really suffered from it.
Yeah.
Because
just because the rest had been so strong.
It's also the weird thing where like in the second film we are shown, again, this is how Star Wars people sound to me. I'm like, in the number two, Ali Larda's character as a obsessive, you know, death freak who's like, I know everything about death's plan. He's never going to get me.
Mm.
Puts herself into an asylum so she can be in a padded room
and protect herself. Visitors aren't allowed to bring anything in, like a pen, a piece of paper. She's like, I know that can kill me.
Essentially that allegory for like, you know, to protect yourself from living.
You basically kill yourself.
Basically kill yourself.
Your life is over.
In a room with nothing. This film, it's trying to, again, it doesn't even really teach it to you that well, that like the grandmother character put herself up in this like, maxed out. It looks like in like
it's
a
kind of like Mad Max.
It's
speaking
like
of
Walking
Max,
Dead.
It's like the Road Warrior, the compound, or it's like surrounded by spiky shit. And it's like that looks very dangerous. What
well,
are you
it's
doing?
Dangerous
there?
Enough that it kills her.
Yeah,
you're like, I don't really get why this is more safe, especially when in your own franchise we were shown that it's safe to be in like a house that's the opposite of this. Anyway,
they manufacture
the plot for the main characters to go back there.
Yeah, imagine driving up there and being like, this will keep us safe.
Well, they specifically, like, correct me if I'm wrong, they go there to be like, that's the place where grandma was safe for years. That's where we have to go to be safe. And the attempt to get in there is what kills their mum. Like, it's just so dumb how it gets us to it.
Yeah.
The deaths that happen there are
boring. Slows down for a while there.
And it's just, it's just that thing where you're like, this franchise still hasn't really cracked being like, we have to build to something, but really these films just build to like, what's the next set piece?
Yeah, that stupid screenwriting book, Save the Cat by Blake Snyder. One of the only things that I have carried with me from it is the idea of second act fun and games, where it's like in the second act of the movie, that should be what most of the trailer is. And like that's the reason people buy a ticket, to just see the fun and games of what you've been promised by a movie. And when the fun and games are over in a Final Destination movie, it's like it's a bummer. You're like, all right, bath and break.
Oh, it's such a good point. You can feel
like, I just want to see more of that. I just want to see more killing, more death.
No, it's so you can feel it in your body when it happens. In every one of these films, I know when the movie finishes.
But at least most of them, they have a fun little ironic twist at the end.
In Final Destination 1, the movie finishes after Sean William Scott gets decapitated. In Final Destination 2, the movie finishes after the barbed wire death. In Final Destination 3, the movie finishes after the nail gun death. Final Destination 4 ends when you buy your ticket to watch Final Destination 4.
It's not that bad.
Final Destination 5, you get to stay, honey.
Yeah.
Final Destination 6. ends after the MRI death. But then we get the twist endings of them all.
Yeah,
and we're back.
I agree. I didn't think that's what you meant. Yeah, there's always like a fun little mean twist of like, well, actually, you didn't really defeat death. And the characters go,
the mean twist.
And then like an anvil comes down from the sky and whomps them on the head.
They're all the exact same thing of like, wait, but if we skipped death, won't it just go back to the top of the list?
It makes the characters seem so incredibly dumb.
Yeah.
It's
what's
like,
the one in this one again?
It's great where it's so our main character gets saved by her brother giving her CPR and she's like, you brought me back to life. Oh my God. Like, where we broke the chain of trauma, of familial inherited trauma. I mean death. And then at the end of the movie, they're talking about it and she's like, yeah, I can't believe you saved my life. And there's a jerk like doctor nearby who's like, eh. And they're like, what do you mean? He's like, well, you know, if he could bring you back with CPR, it probably means you weren't actually dead. Like, you know, maybe your heart stopped, but you weren't brain dead. You didn't actually die. And they're like, no. And then there's a train accident and big logs come out and kill our main characters.
But it's set up with such a good
thing. Yeah, I'm
thing.
Cutting out some
it's
really
so
nice little
good.
Nuanced touches.
I think this film is the one that finally eased me out of like my pattern recognition obsessed brain shouldn't lock on to like not since the fifth film didn't do many of them and this one didn't either that like usually the foreboding song that means you know death is going to get you is Dust in the Wind or
there is someone walking behind you. Turn around.
And
John Denver.
The number 180 for flight 180 in the first film. Just a lot of signals and signs that I was like, oh, they're not in this one or the last one. But
it has
its new ones. And as you said, this little symbol of this penny, this coin.
I fucking love that penny.
Can you describe how the penny plays into this final death?
Okay, so first of all, the penny obviously has, has Abraham Lincoln's profile on it. Lincoln, you know, maybe that was a Final Destination assassination situation.
Of course.
but like it's this brilliant idea of like a penny. They're so useless. No one wants them around. Like the Mint has talked about getting rid of them because who needs a fucking penny for anything? You can't buy anything with them. They're useless. And it also has a myth at the start of the annoying little boy who gets absolutely creamed by like
a piano.
Love that child. He's dropping pennies off the tower and a kind adult says like, don't do that. You know, if you drop it from that height, it could kill somebody. So it's like this, that's the whole ethos of the whole franchise baked into a synecdoche of one little prop, one hero prop of like a mundane thing that could cause death. And there's an unlucky penny that caused that, you know, terrible disaster in the 60s. And the end of the movie is a nice old lady, the only people in the world that would use pennies and 5 cents or whatever, buying a cup of lemonade. And the penny escapes her grip and bounces into the scene.
At a graveyard. She's in a graveyard buying an ice cream.
Buying lemonade.
Yeah, a lemonade.
And it causes the big train disaster that kills our sweet main characters.
And the train derailing... Again, my brain just looked at it.
And it was the first shot of the
movie
was the train tracks.
Yeah, it's true. Well, that whole final moment had a nice, you know, we were always meant to arrive here moment that the franchise does so well. But it's so sad. It's like because the movie opens with, you know, when they're going on this date to the event.
The grandma,
The grandma in her dream vision thing. It's like she's greeted at the door and she's wearing a pretty dress for a date night.
And he says, you look $1 million. And as the penny has rolled and is derailing the train and our main characters are looking at each other, they see the main character's brother's date comes out. She's wearing the same dress.
They're going to like
her dad
a prom.
Says, you look like $1 million.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh my God.
And this, and you know, you make me want to shout for my hand. It starts playing.
Oh my God.
And the train, it derails. They're running from it.
And what is the train carrying?
Logs. And two logs, literally as though they're like giant bullets, just perfectly aimed at their fucking bodies, just flatten them. Again, a film where you're like, wow, I really started to care for these people. And then 3 seconds later, they die. You're like, you're like, you love it.
Oh my God.
We immediately let go of our log.
Okay, run through it quickly. 3 out of 5 for the acting, 3 out of 5 logs.
And opening event, we both said 5 out of 5. Pretty big. Acting, you said 3 out of 5?
3 out of 5. You're going to say 4?
Actually,
you know what? I'll say 4.
I'm going to say 4.
All right.
I thought that...
I'm saving threes for
Tattoo
other movies.
Boy, lead actress.
Yeah.
They were great. I thought everyone was really good, but yeah. Kills, just in general kills.
Not heaps of them really, were there?
But what was there? I feel like there are always less than you think there are.
Yeah.
But I thought they were also great.
Yeah. So it's quality and quantity you're taking into account. If they have less and do them better.
Yeah, you can take it however you want. I'm going to say 4 out of 5.
Yeah, same.
I still think 5 is the best for the, what did you say? Middle act, fun and games?
Yeah, for fun and games.
It has...
most bang for your buck.
Like most bang for your buck. There's like 4 or 5 that are so good. Third act...
It's like a 2 out of 2 logs.
I might give it a 1.
I would give it 2.
It's
still
squarely has nothing in it that I care about.
It was funny that when the mum got killed.
That was a mean one that I was like, oh, you've done that version of a joke a few times. I'm good.
I was a little surprised by it.
Twist end?
4 out of 5.
Yeah,
only one of these is going to get the 5 out of 5.
Yeah. Oh, my God. There aren't enough logs in the world. I would cut down every forest.
Oh, my God.
For the twist ending of Final Destination 5.
To celebrate Final Destination 5.
I feel like throughout this episode, I've realized I can't talk. I probably have to be like Final Destination 5 is still maybe my favorite. Anyway.
Yeah.
But I will give it 4 out of 5. Mostly because the final kill itself
is disgusting. The final shot, there's a real hopelessness to it.
It's really
watching
dark.
The brother and sister just running straight ahead.
Mm.
When he dies, she doesn't react. Like she doesn't see it.
Mm.
And it's just like they're obliviously like the log looming behind them and they're running as fast as they can. It's very cruel.
It's so mean.
Mm.
Yeah.
Good movie.
Really great
really
movie.
Really fun movie.
And such bliss watching it with you as always. I wanted to talk briefly about the main con, I would say, the main thing in the film that I'm like actively to me is quite bad is I mentioned before that like I really miss the
grimy
aesthetic of the early, the first three, particularly like I think like the way Final Destination 3 looks, that like new metal early 2000s.
Yeah, like collage-y, twisted, insane clown posse freaking.
Yeah, like everything's like Dutched all the time. Yeah. And there's that sort of like really early digital camera feel to a lot of it.
Mm.
It's really like, it's a lot like darker visually, but like has really like, by like extravagant light, I just mean like, yeah, it's more like high contrast.
Yeah.
This film
is ugly.
It's both ugly in the like digital flatness way, but also literally like characters not lit when they're talking.
Sometimes when they're doing like the shot, reverse shot of two people talking, one will be lit like, okay. And the other, like you won't be able to make out their expression very well. And it's like, was that worth it for the other person to not look that great either?
It's really
like
weird.
The guy proposing to her at the start, that was really bad lighting.
And that whole sequence has like a lot of CGI, obviously.
Yeah.
But like, it's just like, because the fifth one also, you're like, we're really in the land of like all of these digital deaths. I get it. But like, this one's just like, you're always fighting it visually. Like it just looks ugly as. Again, my biggest one was just like faces in complete shadow. Like it was ugly to look at.
Just very medium contrast.
Yeah, so you felt the same way.
I did. I remember when the first trailer came out and you were like, it's ugly.
I did not think this was going to be a good one. I thought it was going to happen again. Again, it's a franchise we've watched arrive because it doesn't have enough of a signifier in terms of its aesthetic or its characters or anything.
Yeah.
It always just looks like the stylings of
it's a little bit CW
cinema at that time. Yeah, and this is a bit like this is the way that we make Marvel movies is that they sort of look like this. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? Like that's sort of how we make things
on I think
this
the directors,
budget and time now.
The directors also came from being like special effects kind
of
guys.
Totally. Speaking of the directors, I simply had to say this really adorable behind the scenes story that I think speaks to the creative ingenuity on display here where you and me both go, whoa, what a dream gig making one of these movies. How cute. The directors of this film, supposedly what got them over the line when they pitched for this movie is that on the Zoom call, they staged their own deaths as part of the Zoom call.
So when are we going to see that?
I know. Apparently it's out.
What? I couldn't find it anywhere.
Oh, I want to see it. Towards the end of the call.
Because that's very cute.
The fireplace. I'm reading this off an IGN article. I've found them speaking about it somewhere. I can't find it now though. But the fireplace situated behind the two directors became engulfed in flames and the mantle began burning, putting an urgent pause on proceedings. The filmmakers quickly extinguished the blaze, much to the relief of the other meeting participants. But the chaos continued when an overhead ceiling fan came crashing down and decapitated one of the directors, which is the tone they do the whole movie of like just a big red herring and then a really mean dot point kill. You know what I mean? That's really how they do it. I think that's so cute. I love it.
It's very sweet.
That's the way they do it.
Imagine if they like, if it happened, if they actually just died while they were pitching Final Destination.
And they were like, help me, help me. And they're like, we'll give you millions of money, kid. Here you go. You take it. And they were just, they were just dying and asking for help.
That'd be so sad.
I know it's a horror podcast, but when we talk about films, it is pretty funny to be like, it sounds quite like disturbed to just.
Yeah, like how cheery I was over the mum dying before. I don't like that. Yeah, I do like it. Fine. I really
yeah,
like
that's
it.
Something we do. And next week is going to be much, much worse.
Yeah, we're going to see so many more deaths.
Because it's not like I'm going to have less opinions than I did in this, which is maybe one of our longest episodes for one film. Love that.
Geez.
Love that. I just knew we would get into it.
I have a similar feeling coming out this of this franchise. Movie and wanting to talk about it that I had with Better Man, one of my other most anticipated releases of this year. God. Where coming out, I just felt elated. I was so happy.
And such a part of loving it is like trying to replay it for myself. Mm. Like sometimes.
Maybe I'm forgetting a death. How good would that be if when we rewatch it sometime? We'll be like,
there's the two that die in the MRI machine. There's the garbage truck. There's the family that goes to the complex. There's that she dies at the complex
place.
It's
not that many.
There has to be more than that. There's the glass shard one.
What?
There's the glass shard, the lawnmower business.
Yeah.
And we are forgetting the tattoo one that's a fake out that's not real.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Anyway. Okay.
Well, lots of death. There you go. Again, we love this franchise. You need to watch them if you haven't. This has been a pleasure, Liz. Yeah. It's always a pleasure talking about this franchise with you. I love it so much. I love that this film is doing great business. So we will be getting another one.
Yeah, hurry up.
And we'll be getting into Final Destinations 1 through 5.
We've already kind of spoiled our thoughts a little bit, but
I think it's helpful that we started this week because literally we are going to have so much to say.
It could be like a 4-hour long episode. I think we'll have to like really whip through them.
I just don't know if I plan on doing that, Eliza. Mm-hmm. Okay. We'll see what mood I'm in. But one of the fun things we do have for next week's episode is that we aim to integrate a live scream meter.
Well, not live, but
it will be live when we're in the room, which is just what recording is. We are watching 1 through 5 in the context of a marathon. So we're having some great people
over.
You
said they're the ultimate sleepover movies.
They're the ultimate sleepover movies. People don't go, my favorite is Final Destination 3. My favorite is Final Destination 5. People say, oh, I think you, Anthony, did this to me like an hour ago.
What's the one where the guy blah, blah, blah?
Yes.
I thought that two deaths were from the same movie.
And
before.
So you realized you'd seen two different movies.
I realized I'd seen only part of two different movies.
He saw the pool death from 4 and the barbed wire death from 2.
Yeah.
So it's a franchise that everyone's seen bits and pieces of here and there. I know we have our own rankings and opinions, but the litmus test of a good comedy show is the laughs.
Yeah. Or the squeams.
I was going to say, the good litmus test of a horror movie is the screams, but it's sort of the laughs as well, right?
Yeah.
With this franchise. Anyway.
Imagine if when you went to a horror movie, everyone just like every 5 minutes was like, ah! just screaming.
Yeah. We are going to record. When we approach different deaths, we are going to record and compare the screams.
You'll hopefully be able to hear which is the ultimate best death
best
in Final Destination.
I have a mental picture of what I sort of a picture, audio, a mental sound of what I think.
The verb is audiating. It's when you
imagine
a picture something but as a sound.
If
I'm audiating the scream of my friends.
And said, without Anthony's prompting, I'm audiating the sound of whatever right now. I would have been so scared.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
True. Yeah. No, it would have been much more unhinged.
But yeah, that's going to be next week and it'll be so good.
I can't wait. We will see you then. Thank you so much for listening. As always, you can follow us on Instagram, Facebook and Letterboxd. We've got the website now. We have some sick merch up there as well.
Gosh.
If you want to sport some Midnight Screen podcast up there. And you can follow us on our Patreon as well. We have the next poll for our next edition of the Slot Bucket up as well. So you can vote over there for whatever piece of shit cinema you want us to watch next.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
There
Good luck out
is
there. Someone. Walking behind you.
You know what? I could save this observation for next week, but
now.
Okay. I think it's really lucky that they made the first movie, Final Destination, and it's like plane. That's a plane thing. You say your final destination for the plane. Yeah. They're lucky that that title could transfer to, because death is the final destination. You know, it suits all of the movies in the series. They're lucky they didn't name the movie like My Scary Plane Prophecy. And then for the other movies, they're like, oh shit.
It's like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
That's so true.
Like, final destination is nice and versatile.
It works in different things, you know.
Yeah.
And you might say that in reference to other things. It is mostly a plane thing, it's true.
Yeah.
The spooky plane trip. Or turbulence. What if they called it turbulence, Eliza?
Yeah.
I think that would have to be more about them being on the plane more.
Yeah. I think it's good, Final Destination.
What else could you call a Final Destination franchise? Speed round, go.
Death Design.
Yeah, that's good. Another one.
Wait, you're not coming another up with
one.
Them as
no,
well?
I don't have to do it.
Don't Fear the Reaper.
Yeah. No, you're doing good. Like, it's a lightning round. It's hard. One more.
Deadheads.
Okay, one more.
No, please.
this is the last time, I promise.
Time to Die. No, that's so boring.
Would you like to redeem yourself? One more.
It's guillotine, but it's E-E-N, like teens.
Guillotines. But then they all have to be teens.
That's giving like Knight Riders, like a gang, a motley crew of little rapscallions in medieval times.
That's cool. That would be a, what if there's
someone like. Someone, get me a laptop. Get me a typewriter.
I feel like guillotines. It's like a YA French Revolution thing.
Yeah, that is good.
And damn, like, that would go hard, actually.
Yeah?
Yeah, why hasn't anyone done that?
And it's like some of them are Robus purists and some of them are like monarchists and they're always like, you know, there's a girl and she loves a boy from both factions. Wow.
She has to choose.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Bye.